Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Welcome back, folks. Top of mind issue, as you all know, in this legislative session was all about insurance, right? And whether or not there was going to be tort reform, what that was going to mean, how it was going to be presented, what would make it through the process, and so forth. And joining us now is Tim Temple, the Louisiana Insurance Commissioner, and that's what we will talk about with him. Tim, welcome to the show.
Morning, Noel. Thanks for the opportunity to be on today.
Thank you for joining us, sir. This session comes to an end. First, your reaction to what you thought was accomplished versus not so much.
Yeah, look, I think it's fair to say that we made significant reform, legal abuse reform, with the passage of, you know, several bills, the Emily Chenevier's modified comparative fault. We had the passage of the Housley presumption bill. There was a bill that addressed those that are involved in an accident that don't have insurance, that are uninsured, and creates a higher ceiling on what they can't collect. And then we had some transparency bills, too, as far as helping consumers understand the as far as like when you get your renewal, what your expiring premium is, and some other bills like that. So I think, you know, we did make some significant movement on some of the abuse of the system, and then of course we had a couple of bills that I think actually make us go backwards a little bit. But it was a complicated session. It was a very aggressive session on from a lot of different sides. And at the end of the day, we'll see what happens. But it was designed to address the issue, address the cost drivers.
What do you say to folks that in the legislature that have said a number of the bills that were passed are not going to help rates in a favorable way for the consumers?
Well, you know, no, that isn't. it's a tactic that's been taken ever since I became commissioner last year, and it's one that, you know, from my standpoint, I have tried to help shed some better understanding on the insurance process. And you know, I hear it all the time. It's, you know, read an article today from a couple of days ago, you know, the legislation may not lower insurance rates. And I think that I want your listeners, you know, if we want lower insurance premiums, then we have to lower the losses. You know, premiums follow losses. And I'm not talking about lowering losses from legitimate, you know, people that have had a legitimate claim, whether it was for their home or for their auto or whatever it is. We're not talking about the legitimate losses. What we're dealing with is the excessive, the frivolous, the abuse of the system. And I know, Noel, we've mentioned it, I think, the last time when I was on your radio program. Louisiana, you know, the last year that we have a complete set of data for, had 66,000 bodily injury claims in our state versus a state like Alabama, who had 34,000 bodily injury claims, and they've got 500,000 more people than we do. So we're talking about that, the difference there, the overcharge, the overpayment that insurance companies are making in Louisiana, and at the benefit of a handful of people.
Yeah, it's interesting. A lot of what we just talked about, modified comparative fault, the Housley presumption. Just so the listening audience is clear, that's not with property insurance. That's automobile insurance provisions that were modified, right?
That's correct. This session was more focused on the auto side. As you and your listeners know, and I've said, you know, every chance I've got, every time I'm on your program, we did pass reform. Property reform last year, and it is working. It is, You know, I've had companies file rate decreases. Every time I get in front of people, there's always someone in the audience that they can give me a story that they have seen lower, either a reduction in their renewal on their homeowners, or they didn't stay with their carrier. They moved to a different carrier and they got a reduction in their premium. So it is working. It's not as I say time and time, it's not as fast as anybody wants it to be. And it's not as widespread across the state as we would like it. But it is, these things do take time, unfortunately, but it is working. So this session, we were focused on auto more so. We still have some property bills in there, and we're going to continue to work on it. As I say, I'm not going to ease off the gas when it comes to bringing insurance reform and premium relief to the citizens of Louisiana.
You said that there were some bills that failed. In respect to what we were discussing with auto, let's talk about those. What bills are you talking about that you think should have passed?
Look, there was a bill to reduce the premium tax from 3% to down to 2%. And I mean, ideally, I'd like it to go to 1%. Louisiana has the second highest premium tax in the nation, in the country. And I would like to see that reduced because that is a direct savings, a pass-through to you and I. The insurance companies don't keep that premium tax. They have to pay it to the state of Louisiana. That bill didn't even get a committee hearing.
Where do those dollars go, and how much are we talking about?
Look, they go to the state of Louisiana, to the state general fund, and then they get dispersed, you know, as the legislature sees fit. So,
right.
You know, and again, that's one where I think if we're taxing ourselves on insurance premium, I think that those dollars should go to fund insurance related, either mitigation programs or things that benefit us from an insurance perspective. But they didn't. There was a general damage cap bill that, like many states are doing now, you can only collect a certain dollar amount for general damages, non-economic damages. You still get to collect for medical, for lost wages, for, you know, things that you can actually tally up a dollar amount to. But in many states, one of the ways they're helping to combat the abuse of the system is to put a limit on general damages caps. And that was one that didn't get a hearing. Look, there were probably 20 bills that didn't get the light of day this session. So I've got a long list, and be happy to share it with you.
Well, I think it's important for the listening audience to understand, you know, a little bit about the process. There were a lot of bills that were introduced, never got a hearing before a committee, so they had no chance of passing. There was never a vote taken, right, either up or down on these bills. A number of which were priority bills that you were concerned with. Others maybe not, but still no hearing, not scheduled, and didn't have a desire. And a lot of this is just, in my view, political posturing, right? We're just gaslighting people. Look, I introduced this bill and I couldn't get it set. Well, you know, if you really wanted to get a committee hearing, you can get it heard in a committee, I think.
Well, look, there was a lot of pushback on that, Newell, and
I'm talking about as a legislator.
Yeah. Well, look, they were very, very genuine in their desire to have these bills, heard and the debate had on it. But this was a fiscal session bill. This was a fiscal session. There was a lot of other legislation that had to be considered. I'm not making excuses, but I do think, and it's why I still maintain, that we need to have a special session on insurance. I've seen there's some people that have, made statements that we need to just, cool our jets, if you will, and sit back and let's wait and see what happens. I don't think that we can afford to ever not make efforts, good faith efforts, every single session to make our state a more attractive place to do business and an environment where people will be treated fairly from a claims perspective. So, you know, I don't think that we should ever hold back. And every session that we have, I'm going to continue to work with legislators. And if the legislators have the will to bring legislation as Department of Insurance, we're going to work with them to help identify what things will work and what things may not work.
What is the reluctance to having a special session?
I'll tell you, I think that if we have a special session, then the spotlight is 100% focused on this issue for our state. During a regular session, like I said, there's thousands of bills that are considered, and not all of them get heard. And there's a lot of posturing that goes back and forth. And, you know, if you support this bill, I'll support that bill. Or, you know, you don't hear this bill, I won't hear that bill. I mean, there's a lot of leverage that goes on. But, when you have a special session, everybody knows what the mission is during that session. They know what the bills are. And there's a 100% focus on that. And I think that there's probably some folks that don't want to have the focus on what these cost drivers are in the state of Louisiana. Why we as citizens are paying the highest premiums, in the country for some of our products. And look, if we have a special session, and I've heard, a lot of people out there saying it's because insurance companies are making gobs and gobs of money in the state of Louisiana. We have a special session. We're going to be able to have a more than a hearing. We will have a very spirited debate and bring all of the information, and we can let the citizens of Louisiana see for themselves whether or not that's what the cost driver is. If it's not that, we will have conversations and spirited debate on what the cost drivers are. And I think there's a lot of people that don't want to have that exposed.
Yeah, I often ask the question, what do we fear? I mean, information is power. This is obviously the battle of the lobbyists on many fronts. I mean, if we're blatantly honest here, a special session provides an environment where you can have a more robust conversation, and those that don't want to have it, I just don't understand. So what do you fear? Lower premiums?
Look,
I mean, I don't understand what we fear by this. My friends who are plaintiff's attorneys, I have a lot that are plaintiffs and I have a lot that are defense attorneys. So, I don't fear them. I want lower rates. We have population out migration right now in this state, which is very concerning. It should be top of mind for us. And we have states on both sides of us, as you well know better than anybody, that have much cheaper insurance premiums. I mean, you don't have to travel far to get to Mississippi and have your premium base 25% of what you're paying here in Louisiana.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're right on a lot of those comments. The lobbyists are very much engaged, but also I can tell you there's a lot of non-lobbyist conversations, people that have influence and they're picking up the phones and they're able to talk directly with a lot of people that have influence on what's going to be heard or what's not. And when you ask, you've got a good question there, what is the fear? And it's money. This is a money driven argument. And again, if we just look at the stat that, like I said, Louisiana, that year that I told you, that last year where Louisiana had 66,000 bodily injury claims versus Alabama, who had 34,000 bodily injury claims. What does that mean dollar wise? And if you look at the numbers, that's $500 million. That was $500 million more that insurance companies paid out in claims, either through a settlement or whether it was there was attorney's fees in there. There were money that goes to the claimant. There's money that goes to the medical providers that did the health, that provided the medical treatment. That's $500 million in 1 year. That's $500 million. I argue that we shouldn't have to be paying. It's beyond what would be what's kind of a normalized figure. So that's what we're talking about, and that's the people that benefit from that system that don't want change. And the insurance companies aren't putting that $500 million a year in their pocket. That's $500 million that they're paying out. So that's what I'm saying. If we have a true 100% open debate on what these cost drivers are and where the money is going. And look, we passed legislation this year. I just want to add this. This is another bill that will show, and I think starting in January of 2027, when you get your premium on your renewal, you're going to have a chart that's going to show where that premium goes, how much of it goes towards surplus and loss payments, how much goes towards taxes or commissions or overhead. I think that's very good. Transparency is good. I want people to see when they write a check for a premium of dollar, I think it's important for them to see where the insurance company allocates those dollars. I would like to see on the backside how when they pay out a dollar of claims on your behalf, I wish we could have a transparent process to show where those dollars, how they're being distributed.
Yeah. You know, I was just thinking, going back, and I hate to jump back and forth like this, but we spent a lot of time over the last several years talking about reduction in our state income tax. It would have been a lot easier just to eliminate the premium tax.
Yeah. like I said, we're the second highest in the country. And, but look, there's anytime you reduce a tax, if you don't reduce the expenses, corresponding expense, then you're going to have a problem. And again, that's one where we probably, just reducing it from 3 to 2 seemed pretty simplistic. But it, like I said, that bill didn't even get heard at the committee, or didn't come out of committee. So if we were to have a special session, obviously we'd want to look at some reform, but I think we should have conversations about, let's throw tax in there and everything else. I mean, let's give all of these efforts the best opportunity to be successful so that we can lower these cost drivers and help lower, which will help lower premiums.
Well, what I don't like, and I'm not asking you to opine on this, is that we spent a lot of time talking about relieving businesses from business taxes, right? Well, I view my household as a business, and it really upsets me that we wouldn't even consider this for passage of a reduction of a premium tax, because my household as a business would benefit from that, and certainly I think everybody would appreciate it. You want us to go out and get insurance? You're trying to encourage people, because we have a lot of uninsured drivers out there that's wreaking havoc on not only our economy but our communities. And we have a decision to eliminate a premium tax. I'm thinking here, and I'm saying, why would we want to tax ourselves on the premiums that we pay for auto and property insurance? That doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, look, I can assure your listeners, I will be bringing that legislation again whenever the next the next regular session, or if there's a session before that. That is one that I feel that we should reduce. And
we should eliminate it for that. If we want people to have more coverage, better coverage, and just plain simple coverage, the fact of the matter is that we should eliminate that premium tax. I mean, we don't have to wait on the discretion or of an insurance provider, right? We know
that's
we
right.
can
that's
reduce it.
We control
by three,
our fate there, for sure.
We control the fate. I mean, I think you make a great point there. We control that. So why are we, We're like beggars begging everybody else to treat us more fairly. We don't treat ourselves fairly. We're taxing ourselves 3%. How stupid is that? I mean, I don't know why I missed it.
Testify during hearing.
I'll be happy to testify, because it's stupid. I mean, it just runs contrary to common sense. We control this. If you want to do something for the citizens, in fact, I'll ask Cameron Henry about it. He's coming on at noon. I mean, why would we not do this? Eliminate it.
Well, and I'll tell you, you know, Newell, one thing we did do was they did approve an increase in the tax deduction that we would get if we choose to put a fortified roof on ourselves. The current deduction was $5,000, and now they moved it up to $10,000. And again, that was a bill that we asked to be brought because if we're willing to fund a program to give people $10,000 to fortify a roof, we should at least give people that do it themselves, whether, you know, if you're building a new home or you're replacing an existing roof, you should be able to get the same value from a tax deduction. So that was a good another bill that passed. And also for your listeners to hear, too, you know, the legislature did approve a permanent funding for the fortified roof grant program. So now the Department of Insurance license, so the agents, adjusters, insurance companies, all of those folks, they're going to see a slight increase on what they have to pay on licenses, on their renewal license, and that's going to fund a portion of the Fortified Roof Program in addition to allocating a portion, a very small portion, of the premium tax that we pay on homeowners, on our homeowners premium. So that's actually a tax that we will pay that benefits us directly from an insurance perspective. So that was, as we're talking taxes, I did want to add those two comments on there.
Well, I'm glad you did. I mean, it makes sense to invest in ourselves. I mean,
and that's exactly what it's doing. It allows us to invest in ourselves. And I think that's a great phrase and a great way to look at it.
Yeah, I mean, but when you, the flip side is that, as I'm thinking about all the crazy taxes as the former tax collector, a lot of which I was adamantly opposed to. But, you know, it's like, what were we thinking when we decided that we would tax ourselves on all these buckets? I mean, it just doesn't make much sense to me. We have run out of time, Tim. I'd love to get you back on. I know we got so much more to talk about on the property side as well, so we'll reach out to you in the very near future. But we really
appreciate
you.
Let's get back on soon. I'd be happy to. I know a lot of people want to hear more about what took place during session. So just get your folks to reach out, and we'll do this again as quick as you want.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Tim Temple, Louisiana Insurance Commissioner. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Noel. You too.
We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Chris Blair, the voice of the LSU Fighting Tigers. Chris, welcome to the show.
Hey, Noel. Good to be back with you.
Chris, I got to ask you, the shot hit to left field, line drive out to left field. The fielder takes a step back and then runs forward. What were you thinking as you were watching that and then he missed it?
You know, I got to be honest, I actually thought it was going to drop in for a base hit just simply because he stumbled. As you said, he kind of stepped back a minute and then realized he had to come in. And then he kind of stumbled a little bit. And I'm not sure at that point if he just felt like, okay, the only shot I have is to dive forward, which is a very difficult play to make, or if by stumbling he just kind of fell forward. Either way, I was kind of surprised. And now looking back at the replay, I think he just kind of caught where he lost his footing, and it was like, I just got to do something. I got to block this ball. And unfortunately for him, fortunately for the Tigers, it caromed not only behind him, but way over into the corner. And it was wild. I think that was a high difficulty play to make if you were going to try to catch that on the run. It's one of the tougher plays to make in the outfield. But I think just the stumbling part may have forced him to just think, I don't think I can catch it. I just got to knock it down.
You know, it's interesting, and I'm sure you've heard this too. So many Tiger fans kind of left the TV screen thinking that the game was over before that happened. I was not one of them. And then, you know, the last play of the game, to see the short, I guess it was the second baseman, go up in the air, and I thought he was going to make the catch, and then it just tipped off of his glove. I was like, oh, my God, this is unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, it's I've seen some crazy things with LSU baseball in 10 years, I will admit. That may have been the craziest inning I have seen. Because I mean, you had to get a couple of you had to make some good fortune or get some good fortune, as Skip Bertman always says. But you necessarily don't get, you know, the other team to give you three. And basically that's kind of what we saw. What appeared to be a possible double play ball with one out that would have ended it, and we'd all come back on Thursday and played a second game against the Razorbacks. They opt to get the lead runner at third, and suddenly now there's two outs. Then the fly ball line drive to left field that you just mentioned that scored the two runs. Suddenly we're tied. Now you're planning on going to extra innings. And then you get Jared Jones, who was the hero of the night, to be sure, going 3-for-5. And again, you know, it's a tough break for Cam Koziol, who's from Omaha, Nebraska, is the second baseman for Arkansas. His dad's on the grounds crew for the College World Series. I mean, it means a lot to him. And that ball was smoked off the end of the fat barrel of Jared Jones's bat. And if he makes the play, it would have been a heck of a play. I think that's certainly shouldn't be lost, that it wasn't a routine line drive. It was absolutely peppered to him, and he went as high as he could go and just could not bring it in. But that's the type of crazy stuff that happens. I mean, look, Newell, LSU has been to Omaha 20 times in program history, and they have 6 wins in the College World Series by way of walk-off. That's 30%, you know, so that's amazing. So, you know, I think that's part of the mystique of LSU when they get here. I think that's what endears the people of Omaha and those that come from around the country, that when the Tigers are here, I mean, you just never know what you're going to see.
So our opponent, the Coastal Carolina Chanticleers, I'm not clear as to what that is, but I find that no one really knows a whole lot about the Coastal Carolina team, and they kind of set the world on fire this season.
Yeah, I am actually familiar with them. I spent 13 years of my life in the Palmetto State, and when I first moved to South Carolina, it was just a 2-year school for the University of South Carolina in Columbia. People went there for 2 years and then could transfer to other schools. And it was really a feeder school for Carolina's campus in Columbia. And of course, Carolina is the Gamecocks. And, so many, many years ago, there was a history or English professor and some students wanted to change up the name. They were Trojans at one time for their early sports teams. And they figured, well, we're the younger brother or sister of the University of South Carolina Gamecocks. How about Chaucer's Canterbury Tales and the Chanticleer, which was considered the thinking man's Gamecock? So that's where it all comes from. Right. But I am familiar with the program. LSU fans obviously familiar because they made their way to a national championship by running through Baton Rouge and LSU in 2016. And it's a team that, I just watched their press conference a few moments ago, and they're very confident. They've won 26 games in a row. They haven't lost since way back in April. They really haven't had a whole lot of adversity in the games they played here in Omaha. I mean, they've handled their business pretty well. It's a very talented team, and they know it. It was certainly evident by the press conference that just took place earlier today.
Well, let's talk briefly about them strength and pitching. It seems as though they got 3 really good pitchers on this team.
Yeah, that's probably their calling card. It's probably this year with this team is what everybody looks at. I mean, they've just been solid with their front-end pitching. Fluky and a couple of other guys have been just phenomenal. And, you know, a lot of questions were, okay, no disrespect to the Sun Belt. I spent several years calling Sun Belt games, and it's a really good baseball league. Let's not forget there were 2 Sun Belt programs that hosted regionals this year, both Coastal and Southern Miss. But I think a lot of people from a national perspective thought, well, okay, their pitching numbers look great against, you know, the Sun Belt. How's it going to play once they get up here, you know, obviously in regional, super regional, and College World Series? And well, the fact is it's played very well. They're just really good pitchers. So that's going to be a challenge. You know, I LSU is going to have, I think, a little bit of an advantage just simply because that's the type of pitching they see week in and week out all season long in the SEC. And they've just beat a team twice here in Omaha that has a pretty good pitching staff from top to bottom as well. But, you know, that's one of the big strengths of this Coastal Carolina team. But offensively, they're very good as well. I mean, they jumped all over Louisville on Monday and really never looked back.
They go to the plate, and it's at the, what little I watched of them, they're swinging the bat. It's kind of the impression that I got. They, you know, they're going up there swinging.
Oh, no question. You know, and I don't suspect. I mean, the good news is LSU will have, you know, their two best, at least the opportunity to start, you know, in the championship series, which the Tigers, their last two trips up here, haven't had that luxury. You know, Alex Lang, who was the ace in 2017, didn't get to pitch against Florida in the championship series based on the way the rotation worked out. And then in 2023, even though Paul Skeens, you know, got the crowd excited in that championship game against Florida, he never pitched against the Gators in the championship series. So that's the good thing for LSU. The other side of that is Coastal Carolina is not going to be afraid of Kate Anderson or Anthony Hines. And that's not to say those guys can't be effective, because I certainly think they can. But this Coastal team thinks a lot of their offense, and they are super aggressive. They also, you know, crowd the plate. One of their big weapons is free passes, and they've been hit by pitches 176 times this year, which is a single season wow. record in NCAA play. So, and they got a ton of them against Louisville. They got a ton of them against, well, in every game they played. So, it's a very potent offense without question. And, you know, as you say, a lot of people who follow SEC baseball, probably not that familiar with them other than that 2016 national championship. This is a very good team. I mean, it's deep, it's talented on both sides of the ball. And like I said, their press conference says it all. They were asked, I believe, what they admire or respect about, maybe respect wasn't asked. Give us something to the effect of, what are your thoughts on LSU? And nobody gave an answer. And then finally, one of the players spoke up and said, not a whole lot. So That tells you their mindset going into Saturday's game one of the championship series.
You know, it's interesting, though, the flip side to that with this LSU team. And I don't want to use it's not like others that had that swagger, right? This team seems to exhibit a silent confidence where they don't seem to get rattled, I guess is a good way of saying it. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think so. And first off, let me say I'm very proud that Coach Jay Johnson leads this team by example. Not just in baseball, just the way he carries himself, just the way he respects the opponent, just the way he respects the game. And I think that you can't help but that filters down to the clubhouse. And that's kind of the mindset these Tigers have. And I think that's why they have a quiet confidence about them. You know, there's no need to bring attention to yourself when your team and what you've done this season says all that needs to be said. And I think that's kind of the MO that LSU, at least this team, has taken, and really every team for Coach Jay Johnson. That's just the way he loves the game and respects the game. And I think the other big characteristic that I like about this team, that, you know, you look at some of the struggles they had, obviously the Auburn weekend, the loss to South Carolina in that final regular season series on opening day when they just couldn't put them away and let them hang around. You know, the difficulty of being, you know, shut out for the first time since 2022 in the SEC tournament. But it's a team that's always responded. And not only mm-hmm. from game to game or series to series, you know, Doug Thompson and I were talking about it, you know, with the way they played here in Omaha. I mean, they've trailed, but it's almost as if every inning that they get down or they lose the lead, they respond immediately. And to me, that's a great sign, a really strong sign of a great team. And that's why I think this team has made their way here. Would you compare this team to the 2023 team? I don't know. I don't get into that. But I will say I like the way they respond. And not just when they lose or not just when they've had a bad game. I think they also have been able to really put behind the wins as well. And I have no doubt whatsoever that with all the emotion and all the excitement and the elation from Wednesday night's game, that's already been put behind them and probably was early yesterday morning.
First game tomorrow night, who's likely to start?
You know, I don't know. I didn't get to see the entire press conference. Even if I know Coach Johnson, he probably is very close to the vest and probably kindly told everybody, hey, they're still working on the plan, which is true because they've been deep diving onto the Coastal Carolina offense, so they'll see. But, I mean, the good news, I think you go with Kate Anderson. That's just my thought, again, because right. You can keep him right on schedule, but we'll wait and see. That would be my best guess.
Absolutely. Can't wait till 6 o'clock tomorrow evening to see the game. You know, I'm one, I don't know anything about Coastal Carolina other than just a few things that I read about them. So it's going to be, one that's going to be intriguing for me for sure to see, you know, when you think about not being defeated since April, can you remember a team that's put that stat up? I mean, I don't care what league you're in, right?
No. Again, I mean, winning baseball games is hard, regardless of what division you're playing in, what level you're playing in. And to do it that consistently says a lot about why Coastal Carolina is here. And to be honest with you, I thought, honestly, Newell, when the brackets came out and we played regional and super regional play and they narrowed it down to the eight that would come to Omaha, I really felt like the top three teams, in no particular order, were Arkansas, LSU, and Coastal Carolina. And I really mean that. So this is a very good team LSU's got to tangle with.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Look forward to listening to you tomorrow evening. Great job thus far with your coverage of the Fighting Tigers at the College World Series. And thank you so much for making time to visit with us today.
Anytime, Noah. Anytime. Thanks for having me on. Let's have some fun this weekend.
Go Tigers. Thank you. Chris Blair, voice of the LSU Fighting Tigers. They take on Coastal Carolina tomorrow evening, 6 p.m. We'll cover it right here on WWL AM FM. We'll be right back. Stay.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
With us. Welcome back, folks. Let's go to talk lines. Jimmy, you're up. What say you?
Hey, Noel, great show as always. I just wanted to, you know, kind of pose this statement to you guys, the listeners. And I, you know, I've called up a lot of times about the diversion project and how it, you know, either A, it's going to build land supposedly in Plaquemines Parish, or the fishermen say it's going to kill seafood. Same thing with the St. Bernard port complex. You know, a lot of residents think that it's a clear out plan, that it's a citizenless industrial zone plan. And then the other side says it's going to be great for St. Bernard and it's going to bring jobs and all that. So you got both sides of the coin there with the diversion project and St. Bernard's port complex. And both sides are arguing one way or another. And they're pretty hell bent that this is what's going to happen in the end. I compare that to the Israeli-Iran situation, you know, because I'm seeing a lot of former troops, military guys I know who are in the military, PTSD, or they were injured, or they don't want to go to more war. They don't want to, you know, Iraq, weapons of mass destruction, that was all phony. And now we're, you know, it's like this whole tie-in between America and the AIPAC lobby and Israel, to where we have to, it's our greatest ally, but there's some similarities there, Newell, because on one side, it's great to have an ally in the Middle East, but at what expense, you know, because we're giving $12 million a day to Israel, and it seems like, you know, whether it's going to be some scenario that pulls us into war, whether it's real or not, false flag or reality, it's like, because we're the greatest ally to Israel, we have to basically defend them against their enemies and then possibly absorb the refugee crisis that comes from it. So I wanted to get your take on that. You look at the diversion project here. Really, you could look at Louisiana as like, okay, are we going to be business friendly, or are we going to turn the whole coastline into a citizenless industrial zone full of plants and port complexes and clear out the people and poison the waters and kill the seafood? And the same thing applies here with Israel and Iran. Do we go to war on behalf of our greatest ally? But at what point are we being fleeced? I mean, $12 million a day we give Israel, and we have potholes. We have tap water in Flint, Michigan, and Jackson, Mississippi that's toxic. I mean, obviously our infrastructure in America is falling apart, and yet we're funding our greatest ally at all expenses, and now we're kind of getting pulled into this whole situation where we have to defend them. So I want to get your take on that.
Let me just say this as it relates to Israel-Iran. Two things can be true. It's not only on behalf of our greatest ally, because typically when that theocracy speaks, they say death to Jews and Americans. So it's not or, it's and. So they're our enemy as well. And the reality is they would like nothing more than to kill as many Israelis and to kill as many Americans as possible. And they've already revealed that they're willing to do so, because they have done so. The reality is that we have to come to grips with whether or not we're going to allow them to become a nuclear power or not. And that's not just the United States. That's Israel. That's the EU. That's everyone in NATO, and all the EU members. They all should be concerned about whether or not they become a holder of nuclear weaponry. And it's a big issue. I think the president thus far has taken a measured approach. Obviously, this is a very difficult thing, because if you attempt to take that facility out and you fail, there really are not many options. As one of my guests said the other day, we should always ask what next in the case of something that doesn't work out. It'll be interesting. It's not a good position at all. Unfortunately, I think we're in this position because of a lot of what President Obama did. And we had many opportunities to drill down on this country, to continue with the restrictions on this country, and decided not to let them go. In fact, we delivered cash, which was stupid as well. So it'll be interesting to see where this ends up in the coming days. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9-to-5 for a 5-to-9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Service is not available in all areas.